If you've ever experienced stress, tension, or overwhelm, and who hasn't, this episode is for you. Please note that neither Shabnam nor I are mental health professionals, so please consult your preferred healthcare specialist. In the Brain Podcast, we blend medical insights with behavior design principles to empower you in creating brain healthy habits. We aim to demystify brain health, enhance focus, and reduce the risk of dementia. Join us as we unlock the secrets of the brain, all backed by science and fueled by behavior design.
I'm Dr. Shabnam Das Kaur. I'm a functional medicine doctor and a certified tiny habits coach. I teach people how to improve their focus, get rid of brain fog, and reduce their risk of dementia.
And I'm Andrea. I'm a behavior design consultant and partner in BD3 Solutions. I work with organizations to harness the power of high-performance habits to increase engagement, resilience, and well-being. This session is going to be very different. After we talk a bit about stress resilience, we're actually going to do the processes that we're sharing. Here's how it's going to go. We'll tell you about a technique, then we'll do the technique in real time, and you can experience the changes for yourself because we'll be doing them together. There are going to be some pauses as we go through and some silence. So please know this ahead of time. There's nothing wrong with the recording. We really hope that this ultimately will be a very practical resource for you that you will return to again and again. So Shabnam, before we go into the practices, can you explain a bit about what happens in the body during stress? And know that we will go into a deep dive on what happens in the body in stress and other things you can do about it, that this will just be a high level understanding before we do the practices.
Thank you, Andrea. So yes, stress is actually, we are going to do a separate episode on that and do a deep dive. But for today's episode, it's briefly, everyone knows what is stress. But again, if you ask someone to describe, it's different things for different people. So to give a very simple, analogy, it's like, imagine if you think back to our hunter-gatherer ancestors, you are, going looking for animals to hunt. And what happens then? If you think of from the perspective of the animal, it's like the animal either gets hunted or it doesn't. So what are the things that happen? They are running, they need extra, speed and force in their legs. So similarly, if you think of a hunter-gatherer human, it's the same thing. They're going hunting and it's for a short span of time. They have to hunt for a prey and make sure they don't become someone's prey. So all the things that happen to the body, so those are the physiological changes, and we'll go into that in detail. But one important thing to remember is that stress is acute. It happens for a short time and then it's gone after that. However, the stress that we talk about today, by virtue of the way we live, it's quite different. Yes, there are acute phases of stress, but there are also chronic ongoing stress. And the stress can come from many different things. It can come from, the environment. It can come from relationships. It can come from, job dissatisfaction. It can come from poor health. It can come from mental health conditions. And mental health conditions and stress have actually a bidirectional nature. On one hand, stress can cause mental health challenges. And on the other hand, mental health challenges and stress are also intimately related in other ways. So basically, the most important question here, so this is what, Andrea, I ask my patients is, do you feel stressed, number one? Number two is, which area of your life is making you feel stressed? Where does the stress come from? Is it your job? Is it your family? Is it a kid who's having some challenges? Are you taking care of older parents? Some of those stresses are things that you can control, and some of them are things you cannot control. So one is to focus on things that we can control rather than focusing on things that we cannot control, like all the things that is happening in the geopolitical scenario, the wars and all these things. We feel very bad about them. There's not a lot, Andrea, that you and I as individuals can do about them.
No.
So one is better to focus on things I can do. So one of the things we can do is manage our response to a stressful situation. And herein comes, you know, this entire episode, we're talking about building stress resilience. And I love that term resilience, you know, because it gives us agency. It's like we are not left to someone else's, you know, someone else is doing something to us. We can do things to help ourselves. So all the techniques we're going to talk about are basically to help us as individuals. What can we do to make us not feel helpless, if I'm putting it the right way?
Right.
And one of the things that, you know, we talk about in when we talk about building stress resilience is something called eliciting a relaxation response. Now, the term relaxation response comes from the research of Dr. Herbert Benson way back in the 70s. He was a cardiologist, and what he did is he decided to look at mindfulness techniques and a whole bunch of techniques. He did a lot of clinical studies. And so the relaxation response is whatever practice you do, and there are many different practices which can elicit a relaxation response. And we will share all the resources as always. So, I mean, you will not be left like that without any resources. So in a relaxation response, what happens? Number one is our heart rate goes down, our blood pressure levels go down, our breathing rate goes down. So any technique, whether it is mindfulness-based stress reduction, meditation, deep breathing, you know, different kinds of breathing techniques, or some of the wonderful things that, you know, we are going to share here today, any of those things give you this response, the relaxation response. That is what we are looking for. And this is, again, a very sort of a medical kind of view. But then as a clinician, I want to know what are the things I need to look for. What are the actual, you know, change in like, for instance, change in blood pressure, pulse rate? These are absolutely measurable things. So, Andrea, you're going to share a few of the techniques today. What are the different techniques we are talking about?
Well, you mentioned meditation earlier, and I just really want to tell people that we're not going to actually force you to become meditators. It works for many people, and it's a great practice to do. But the techniques we have for you today are actually things you can do in the moment, and they don't take very much time at all. So if you're meditation resistant or meditation hesitant instead of meditation curious, then we have a few techniques for you today. One of them is 4-7-8 breathing. One of them is heart math. The other one is a 5-4-3-2-1 grounding technique. And then another one is a loving kindness technique. And as I said before, we're actually going to tell you what the process is. Then we're going to do the process together so that you can experience the benefits for yourself. And then hopefully you can come back to have this guidance until you can integrate these processes together. Do you want to talk a little bit about your experience meditating before we do the practice?
Yes, thank you, Andrea. And, you know, this is so important that you stated right at the beginning, because whenever anyone talks about, you know, stress, building stress resilience, or people say stress management, now I don't know how everyone can manage all their stress because it comes from so many different directions. So mindfulness-based stress reduction or meditation, these are, you know, they have become very popular. And I am a long-term meditator. For more than 15 years, I think I've been meditating. I feel it's like a superpower for me. But what I really want to state is neither Andrea nor I think that is the only way. There
right.
is no one best way. But if you're open to exploring, so on our episodes, we always talk about, you know, we in the Tiny Habits method, we always talk about self-experimentation. Try out a bunch of, if meditation is not for you, there should be no guilt, no judgment. It's like,
exactly.
Oh, I know I need to meditate. I have so many patients, Andrea, who tell me, I know I need to meditate. I said, why do you want to meditate? No, my friend says it's a good idea. I said, have you tried it? No, I can't get my thoughts to, be together, and I don't like being silent with myself. I said, then this is not for you. Let's
Exactly.
find
Find
something
something
that
else that
works
is for
for you.
you.
Yeah, so
So
that
maybe one
is.
of the practices today will be really good for you. What are the benefits that you've seen before we get into the practice? What are the benefits you've seen from
So
15
I
years
have
of meditation?
personally, what I find is it helps me sort of center myself and go into my inner silence. Now, if someone has not experienced these things, you won't understand what I'm talking about. But one of the big things I find is I find that I can solve a lot of my problems when I'm, meditating. Somehow, and again, it might sound woo-woo, and for some of you listening to this, you've probably experienced it yourself, so you know what I'm talking about. It's like it's from a scientific perspective, of course, there are gazillions of studies on showing how mindfulness techniques, change gene expression, the lower blood pressure, the lower blood glucose levels, the lower inflammation. But personally, what I feel is I feel that sort of the feeling of strength or resilience that, okay, this is a problem I have. Let me find out what the solution is during my meditation. And so many times the solutions have come to me during meditation. Now, very likely, what happens is because I'm not distracted by a lot of other things, that I'm letting my, if you want to call my higher self to provide me with solutions, which I don't otherwise experience when I'm like busy, busy, busy doing this, doing that, looking here, looking there with my eyes open. So that is my
Right.
personal experience. But someone else's experience may be completely different. And as I said, there is no judgment.
Exactly. And that's we're a judgment-free zone. I think the most important part is that when you are in a meditative state, or at least when you're calm, your brain is not in you have access to a part of your brain that actually solves problems. When you're in stress, your brain doesn't process anything deeply, nor should it, because stress should ignite the fight or flight response, which is you're gonna all of your energy goes to your arms and legs so that you can get away. You're not thinking of long-term planning or long-term solving, because if you were stopping to solve a problem, you'd probably get eaten by a bear. So, however you get to a calmer state, whether it's one of these practices or if you pick up meditating, odds are that you're going to have more access to resource to navigate situations more easily. So let's start with the first practice.
Okay, so what are we starting with?
The first practice is going to be 4-7-8 breathing. And I will count you through this. I'll tell you first. It's four, inhale through your nose for a count of four. Hold your breath for a count of seven, and then breathe out through your mouth for a count of eight. I will do the counting for you, and we're going to do that four times. So there will be silence because breathing in is not a very loud procedure, but I will also count. And for you listening, just take a notice of how you feel right now, what it feels like to be you, right? Maybe you have some tension in your body. Maybe you're holding your breath. Maybe your brain feels like it's going a million miles an hour. And just notice that. And then notice how you feel afterwards. All right, so 4-7-8 breathing. Let's begin. Inhale, two, three, four. Hold, two, three, four. Five, six, seven. Exhale through your mouth. Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Inhale. Two, three, four. Hold. Two, three, four, five, six, seven. Exhale, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Inhale, two, three, four. Hold, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Exhale, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Last time, inhale, two, three, four. Hold, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Exhale, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Now, if that wasn't to your pacing, that's okay. When you do this yourself, you pace yourself in the same way, but now you know how to do it. So just check in with yourself.
That maybe was fantastic, Andrea.
Do you feel, how does it feel for you? What did you notice?
It seems very good. And another thing I noticed is I find it more comfortable closing my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I think people can do it either way. They can leave their eyes open or close their eyes, whichever is comfortable. And
yes.
The 4-7-8 breathing is so popular. I remember I wrote an email once and many people said it helps them sleep better. So that's just one of the benefits. You can use it when you're feeling anxious, when you have a panic attack. There's so many different ways of using it.
Even when you hit, when your head hits the pillow at night or when you turn out the light, you can do a little, you know, four rounds of 4-7-8 breathing. Mm-hmm. And all the techniques today we're sharing with you, so you don't really need anything but yourself. Right? That was our goal here, is that we don't want you to have an app or a tracker or your phone, just you, your body, and whatever's around you. So let's go to the second one. And this I got from HeartMath, and we'll put the HeartMath resource in the show notes. They did a lot of science around heart coherence. Heart coherence is where your heart and your brain are in sync. And when they're working together, you have access to more of your mind, and your brain and body are working together and you're calmer. There's a lot of benefits, and they do a lot of scientific research. This process is breathing at your own pace. Imagine like you're going to breathe in and out through your heart. And then we're going to evoke a positive feeling like love or gratitude or something like that, whatever works for you. If you have a challenge evoking a positive feeling, you can think of someone or something that you love or that you're grateful for. And oftentimes little babies or tiny animals of your choice are great things to imagine to evoke that feeling in your heart. After you have that feeling in your heart, we're going to imagine that you're projecting that feeling around you in like a sphere, 360, over your head, under your feet, in front of you, behind you. And then you're going to just sense the feeling in your heart. And if you could feel that feeling around you in that bubble, and you're kind of holding those two places at once. So it's called convergent, that's in the inside feeling inside your heart, and divergent, the feeling outside focus. And when you can hold a convergent and divergent focus at the same time, it also helps, along with the positive feeling, it helps put your brain and heart into coherence so that you can be calmer, you can solve problems more effectively, you can navigate challenges. All right. So before we do that technique, just tune into yourself again. See how you feel right now. Right? What's going on for you? And then just let your breath settle however it settles. You don't have to pay attention to it. You don't have to try to make it do anything. And then imagine that your breath is going in your heart, in and out through your heart. And you can go at your own pace. I will guide you, but feel free to go at your own pace for this. So your breath is coming in and out of your heart. Breathing in through your heart, breathing out through your heart. And now imagine a positive feeling like love or gratitude. And feel that feeling in your heart. And then imagine that you are breathing that in and out through your heart. So you're breathing in love through your heart and breathing out love all around you. breathing in love and breathing out love all around you. And then notice how the love feels in your heart. And then notice or imagine or sense how it feels all around you, 360, front of you, back of you, either side, above and below. And breathe in love and breathe out love. And breathe in love and breathe out. Once again, noticing inside your heart and then all around you with every breath. And then you can continue at your own pace for a little bit. And then with your next breath, you can bring yourself back into your body and into this space, wiggle your fingers and toes a little bit, and notice how you feel.
That was very nice.
I find this is a great thing to do. I mean, this will do the same thing. You can fall asleep and you can, but it also is a great thing to do right before you're going to learn something new. Because it really puts you into a different space so that you can take in some new learnings.
Yeah. So, Andrea, I know you do a lot of public speaking. Do you use any of these techniques before?
I do. I actually use heart math before every talk. And oftentimes I do it as the initial part of my talk.
Oh, wow.
I actually will do, I say, before I begin, because I do a lot of workshops, before we begin, I want to put you in an ideal state for learning. And then I do what I just did for everyone listening at the beginning of my workshops.
Oh, wow.
And I have to laugh because oftentimes, no matter what the workshop is, when I get feedback, hands down, the most favorite part of the workshop was the heart math breathing technique.
Oh, wow.
No matter what. And I often laugh. I say, you know what? I shouldn't even teach what I teach. I should just teach heart math, right? Because that's what everybody remembers. And I get feedback from people years ago who I did a talk for them, and they say, I still use that technique in XYZ circumstance, or before an interview, or when I have a challenging conversation, or when I've had an argument, or when I have a bad day at work. I get so many emails and messages from people who still use that technique simply because I did it at the beginning of one of my workshops. Wow. So I highly encourage people to practice that one.
And Andrea, you know, you reminded me of something. So one of the times I use, and for each person it may be different, I use meditation. It's like in between, let us say, two meetings. One meeting is like I have had to think a lot, talk a lot, discuss a lot of things with people. And then I need sort of like a pause. And you and I have talked about this before. And that is the reason we have like a cushion between two meetings of at least 15 minutes.
Right.
So quite often I set a timer because I don't want to miss my next meeting.
Exactly.
And just 7 minutes, 8 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever works for you. And sometimes it's as simple as taking two deep breaths in between, you know, in between meetings. And it's like, these are simple things, but they go a long way.
Really. And that transition time is really important. And I think it's very underestimated. People underestimate the power of controlling or navigating your transitions. Instead of getting shot out of a cannon from one meeting to a phone call to a fire to from work to home, even just doing any one of these quick techniques, because none of these took more than a couple minutes.
No,
right? Even just doing.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's even just doing these techniques. Let's say you finish a Zoom call. After you click off your Zoom call, you do a round of 4-7-8 breathing, or you do some heart math breathing, or you do any of the other techniques we're going to talk about. That can set you up for being more present, being less reactive, having less stress throughout the day. And the more you can make it automatic, make it a habit, the more you'll see the effects in your life. You'll just expand your capacity to navigate change and challenge. So let's talk about the 5-4-3-2-1 grounding technique. And this one is probably the only one that you have to have your eyes open for the beginning of it. But then you can close them. And I really encourage people to, first of all, learn the practices that work for you and pick the ones that you like. But then learn to do them with your eyes open. First, do them with your eyes closed if you want to. But then eyes open, eyes closed, it doesn't really matter. So that you can be in a stressful meeting, no one needs to know that you're doing heart math breathing. No one needs to know that you're doing 4-7-8 breathing. But you can just do it silently once you're good at it, right? And that can help you navigate some challenging situations. So the 5-4-3-2-1 grounding technique is this. 5 things you can see, 4 things you can feel, 3 things you can hear, 2 things you can smell, and 1 thing you can taste. Now, this one, I think, like 5 things you can see, just you could look around you and see, maybe you see a keyboard, maybe you see a phone, maybe you see some trees, maybe you see a picture, maybe you see a pet, right? Things you can feel can be on your body, like your clothing, it could be your hair, it could be your eyes blinking, the touch of the air in through your nostrils, right? It could be just your fingers against one another, right? Things like that. It doesn't necessarily have to be someone's touching you. 3 things you can hear. Oftentimes, it's even the sound of your own breath, the sound of your heart beating. It could be things in the distance, right? Some kind of person doing their lawn or yard work, or maybe school bells or church bells or things like that. 2 things you can smell. Sometimes it's really interesting what you can smell if you're inside, right? You might smell this morning's coffee or tea. You might smell someone's lingering perfume or the smell of the steam from the shower. And then 1 thing you can taste. And maybe that's something you've just eaten. Maybe it's your minty toothpaste. Maybe it's just the taste of yourself, your own, what's inside of your mouth. Or what you can imagine, right? You might be imagining your lunch, how that might taste. Okay. And that's basically all you do. So this one will have a little bit more silence in it as I just narrate, look for 5 things you can see. And we'll do that right now.
Okay.
All right. Look for 5 things you can see. Now, notice 4 things you can feel. Listen for 3 things you can hear. And now see if you can find 2 things that you can smell. And now taste 1 thing that you can taste, or notice 1 thing that you taste. And that's the process. And even now you can see, right, there's a little bit of deepening. And I should actually mention that we don't want you walking around looking for things, right?
Oh yeah, really, I need to sit in
a process. It's really just a process you should do in the moment, wherever you are, from wherever you are.
Yeah, and this grounding technique, actually, a lot of people said it helps them with their anxiety and panic attacks. And, you know, right now, you and I are not having anxiety or panic attack, but I felt it, like, it's so different. Here I am, I was trying to feel so I have a mat on which I stand for my standing, you know, at my standing desk. And I've been standing on this mat for a long time. And today when you said, you know, feel something, I said, okay, let me feel what it feels like standing on this rubber mat. And it felt different.
Wow, that's really fascinating. And I think this particular technique really grounds you in your body and your body's senses. And I think a lot of times when we're in stress, we're not in our bodies. We're in the future, we're in our heads, we're just anywhere but in our bodies in the present moment. And I think this is a great way to get people in their body. I mean, sometimes I was feeling like I stand on balance board. And I was
Oh.
noticing that my toes were kind of hurting on it when I really tuned in. And I've been talking for this whole time, and I even through all the processes until I did this, I didn't really realize like, oh, I actually should readjust my toes because they're when I tuned into four things I can feel, it was a little discomfort in my toes. So it's a great process to kind of get us into what we've mindfully notice what we may be kind of ignoring but tolerating.
Yeah, and when you talked about the two things to smell, sometimes what I do is we've talked about using essential oils for helping cognitive function, but sometimes I find that just putting a little bit of some essential oil on a cotton ball or something and keeping it inside my handbag because it makes my handbag smell good, and because I don't want to carry the liquid essential oil, it'll spill here and there. That helps too.
Yeah, and we'll do another episode of things that can help you where you need something maybe more than yourself, right? But this episode, we
Yeah.
want to focus on what can you do if you don't have any props, right? If you just have yourself and you have some stress, what could you do? And so our final technique is a loving kindness meditation, and I'll say it for you, and then we'll put a link to one particular person's loving kindness meditation. You can find your own that resonate with you. In loving kindness, it's a process of first sharing loving kindness with yourself, then sharing kindness with another person, imagining sharing it with another person that you like, right? And then sharing the loving kindness with the both of you, and then rather. Other people that you maybe know or don't know. Now, my understanding of some loving kindness meditations is when you get to the last one, when you get advanced, you can actually wish loving kindness for people you actually dislike.
Yeah, and I've heard people say that at the beginning they found that very hard.
Exactly.
So again, if you're finding something hard, something is making you uncomfortable, then don't do that,
No, I believe personally that that's something to work up to. And one way that you could do that is maybe you wish loving kindness for someone that maybe you had a little disagreement with, but you still ultimately love. Like maybe your spouse or partner, you had a disagreement with them, you ultimately love them deep down, but maybe in this moment you're feeling a little rankled. So then when I say may they be happy, you could think of them. Right. And then ultimately, if you want to, and only if you want to, you could work up to people that are more and more challenging for you. But you'd never have to do that because just the simple process alone will help you. So here's how it goes. It's all about wishing happiness, health, and peace and ease for people first. And the phrase is may, it's either I, we, I, you, we, or they. May I be happy, may I be healthy, may I be peaceful and at ease. Right. So we're wishing that for ourselves, right? Then it will be you, and that's someone that you like or love, the same wishes for them. Then I think of we together, you and whoever you're thinking about together, may we both be happy, healthy, peaceful, and at ease. And then when I say they, maybe you just think of other people in the world, whatever's easiest they for you to think of. Just other people, maybe a group of people that you like in general, a group that you're affiliated with, or other family members, right? You can think of it that way. May they be happy, healthy, peaceful, and at ease. And whether or not you ever work up to wishing someone you are just in a disagreement with or you dislike, that doesn't really matter because the process will help you to begin to, in just in general. All right. So we'll just do one round of this and we'll begin with ourselves. And so you can listen to this, but you're going to say the I will be I for you. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I be peaceful and at ease. And take a moment to notice how that feels in your body. Now, think of someone you care about, and to them, you'll say, may you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be peaceful and at ease. And notice how that feels. And think of both of you together. May we be happy. May we be healthy. May we be peaceful and at ease. And notice how that feels. And now think of a group of people or an imaginary group of people that you might like. May they be happy. May they be healthy. May they be peaceful and at ease. And that is a loving kindness meditation. So any of you who haven't meditated before, all of these are forms of, you've just meditated and you can see how easy that is. And even though we did each one, you can see had some benefit, right? And even doing all those together, you can see that there are probably some subtle differences for you. And you just need to pick the one that you think you can get yourself to do and practice it, right? So Shab Mom, how do you think about these resilient building strategies? And, you know, I'm sure people ask you, like, what's the best one?
Yeah, and it's there was a time I used to actually prescribe mindfulness and, you know, meditation for everyone. Then over the years, I realized, no, that doesn't really work. The patient feels guilty because that is not something they have done. Now I've learned better, hopefully. So in the Tiny Habits world, we always talk about, what do you, as you said just now, Andrea, what do you see yourself doing? And the other thing is, you know, a single practice, just doing it now, maybe you're doing it now with Andrea and me on this, you know, listening to this episode, it may not make any difference to you right away. But that doesn't mean it won't help you long term. So most of these things, actually, it's sort of cumulative. It's like if continue practicing it and without any judgment, it's like, oh, I'm not feeling any different today. I've meditated for 5 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. It may not show up right away, but if you keep persisting at it, knowing that you will see results eventually, that is important. And the thing that I really want to highlight is try a whole bunch of different things. Nowadays, there are gazillions of free resources. There are, so if using an app helps you, initially I find a lot of people find it helpful to use a guide if they want to do meditation, a guided meditation. And if, you know, your religion is something important to you, maybe it's a prayer that's going to help you. That works as well. So find what works for you. And most importantly, no judgment. Just because your friend benefited from whatever technique, it doesn't mean you're going to see the same benefits. And it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you.
Right, right. Yeah. And because it's really about what works for you. And I always encourage people to notice what happens immediately after.
Yeah.
Right? So notice how you feel before and notice how you feel after. And there's always some benefit immediately after. You know, you may still get irritated with your spouse or partner or child later. And that's where the cumulative results will show up. You will start to notice, oh, I'm not as easily triggered. I don't get upset as many things. Or if I do get upset, I catch myself before I go too far. Or I'm able to navigate situations that I wasn't able to navigate before. So consistency will build your resilience, stress resilience, so that you will end up feeling a little more peaceful through many things, but they always help in the moment. And I really encourage people to notice how you feel before and how you feel after, because that's what's going to give you the feedback to keep going. It's going to make you feel successful and help wire these things in as habits. So we hope that you refer to this podcast as practical resources, that you come back to your favorite one and try it out, do it again, and explore the show notes. We really thank you for listening. Please obviously like, rate, subscribe, and share. And you can find all the podcasts that we have at drkarmd.com/podcast. So drkarmd.com/podcast. Cheers, everyone.
Thank you, and bye now.